Everything's going great.
Yeah, that was inspirational.
It was great.
Just like to thank our listeners for listening. Thank you.
Did you get that headphone fixed, even Devin?
Yes. Put them on.
You're saying you can't hear. You can't hear us.
No, I can hear you.
You can't hear?
Yeah.
What am I saying?
What are you saying?
Wait a minute. Why does this thing keep slipping down? I got everything tight. Is that good? You got that? Can you say your name while you're out here today?
My name is Christian.
Christian.
My first name.
All right. Are you staying out here, or?
Yeah, I've been staying here for a while.
Yeah, what brought you down here?
I used to be homeless downtown for a while, and I went home. I didn't actually go home. I decided.
You gotta talk a little bit more into the mic.
More into the mic.
I guess so. Are you soft-spoken?
No. I've just been talking to a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. Your voice is a little hoarse.
Yeah, I'm a non-denominational Christian, so I believe I'm here to protest.
Okay.
And just like everyone else is.
What does that mean, non-denominational Christian?
That means I don't believe in churches and I don't believe in religion.
But you follow what? I mean, you're still a Christian.
I follow my soul. Basically.
What's the Christian part of that? I mean, how is that Christian?
I believe every single person knows from the day they're born till the day they die what the difference between right or wrong.
Is that through Christ or, I mean, you did say Christian. I'm just saying.
Okay. Let this guy finish with his mic. Can you repeat the question, please?
Well, I was just saying, it seems like if your religion's coming from inside of you, I was just curious about why you use the word Christian then, or what Christ has to do with your religion.
Because I believe that the truth is God and God is the truth.
So somehow he's your example. He's God.
If I know Jesus if I know in my soul that it is true, then it is true. And shouldn't I believe everything that you speak to me?
So you believe that Jesus is God. That's why you're a Christian.
I believe that Jesus is the reincarnation of God as man.
Right now. Right now. All right. Thank you. Thank you. That's awesome.
Is that it?
That's what I was curious about that. Because non-denominational Christian, I was trying to figure that out.
I don't believe anything created by man is anything worth believing in. Because I cannot put my faith in man. Because man will always do the wrong sometime.
It really seems like
do
it.
Do the wrong sometime. Well, do the wrong all the time, but he will do the wrong at least once.
Yeah. I don't know why you keep fading out.
Oh, it's because I'm moving. I do believe that man will eventually do wrong.
Each man is all
a man. A man, and let me specify, man, I mean to say people.
Human beings as a species will
as
go
a species,
wrong?
Yes.
And each individual
But we can't judge anyone, that's the problem.
What about each individual? Are they all still destined to do wrong, or could an individual be just good?
You mean destined to do wrong? Yeah, people can be good people.
Completely good.
Yeah, as long as they understand what they did was wrong, acknowledge that it is wrong to do that, no matter what the reason, and then ask for forgiveness.
Sure.
You have to forgive yourself before you can ask for forgiveness.
Yeah, forgive yourself before you ask for forgiveness. And how do you know when that's granted?
Because I will feel it.
You know it in your heart?
No, not my heart, my soul.
Your soul.
There's a difference.
Okay.
Heart's a body. It's part of your body. Soul is your soul.
An individual can be good, or each individual can be good.
Yes.
By learning and forgiving themselves and then asking forgiveness. Each individual can be good.
They become good, yes.
And anybody can be a Christian, right? You don't have to be born into it.
No.
Right. So why is mankind doomed then, if every individual can be good?
Because it says it right in the Bible.
I see.
It will happen. And here's the funny thing. The Bible says is that these things are going to happen, right? Well, if we would have believed that it was true, then we would have tried to stop it, right? But it says that the majority of people aren't going to believe.
Mm.
Because they either don't want to, or they're scared. There's a million reasons why you don't believe in something, but there's only one reason you do the right thing.
Because you feel it.
No, because you believe it to be true, or you think it's the right thing to do.
Right.
And everyone knows the difference between right or wrong. You want to know why I know?
Why?
Because even a child that is totally ignorant to thinking, logic, blah, 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 blah. Okay?
Right.
They know what's the difference between right or wrong.
And by that, well, when I interact with little kids, I think one of the most striking things is they want to, you know, be happy, basically, and they want to make you happy.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah? Just that basic desire of making somebody else.
Basic desire to make other people happy.
Live in harmony?
Yes.
What's so hard about that? That's what I'm saying. Every time I'm walking down the
street.
You want to
know what's really hard about that?
What?
You're just about to start judging people. That's why it's so hard. Because you have no right to judge another person. Because how are you supposed to say you're any better than that man right over there in that shirt? No matter what.
How did I judge him? What was I going
to
do?
I guessed that you were about to judge him. Because that's how conflicts start. If you ever looked at a fight, little bit how a fight starts, like an argument.
I rarely see a very
someone
serious
fight. Someone calls someone a name, right?
I rarely see a very serious fight.
I don't mean physical fight as in physical. I'm talking about in words, okay? When I've been walking down these streets back and forth.
Yeah.
Back and forth, back and forth.
You're staying here too, right, Christian?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I try and tell these people, do not judge people.
Sure.
Because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You can't judge someone because you're automatically going to offend them because you are telling them what you think they know about each other, themselves.
Is that non-judgment part of, would you say, your religious belief or more logical belief?
No, it's my religious belief.
It's your religious, because it's...
Because it's part of the, it's the truth.
It's the truth, and it's taught in the Bible. Don't judge, or something like that, right? Don't judge. Thou shalt not judge, right?
Yeah, but I don't know. See, I can't really trust everything I read in the Bible, but everything I feel is right that I read in the Bible,
right.
I can.
Right. Well, I think that's the only way you can be. You know, what you feel is right is right. What else can you do as a human, really?
Yes, but here's the thing. You can't confuse yourself into thinking what's right is wrong. Because no matter... Okay, so I'm going to tell you the story, and then I'm going to be done, okay?
Sure.
So I was walking down here, and I was talking to this one guy. I've had this conversation with him for days and days.
Yeah.
But we haven't really been arguing, but we've had educational discussions because he's a grown man. He doesn't believe in God because he believes in other things. You know, like, he believes in, like... He just says random crazy stuff.
Humans, man. You know, humans are all over the place.
Yeah, humans can do whatever they want.
And they'll tell
them
what a human
will do. Allow that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to prosecute you like a Catholic would because a Catholic's not a Christian.
Right. I was raised Catholic.
I know. The Crusades.
How do you know that?
Because you just told me.
You rock.
Thank you, bro. Okay, so let me see. The Catholic Crusades, whatever, right?
Yeah.
Okay. They prosecuted people. It says in the Christian religion, I believe in the Christian faith. Sorry, Christian religion. Christian faith that you should not prosecute anyone no matter what.
I like the sound of that.
I don't like this whole 99%, 1%.
Oh, that's what I was saying. I was talking to a guy earlier.
Dude, I really, no.
He said 100%. What's this 99 for?
What's the 99 for?
Yeah. What's wrong with 100?
Because we automatically want to judge somebody.
Right.
We automatically think it's somebody else's fault, not our own.
Yeah.
We want to place judgment on someone else, not ourselves.
I think 100% couldn't fit on the buttons that well because there were three digits, so they had to say 99.
I don't know, man. I'm just trying to speak the truth as I feel it. Well, and if we live in a world where we don't believe in God, then we don't believe in consequences, right?
I'm not sure of that.
I think that. I would think that.
Yeah.
And I would go totally crazy if I lived in a world where there are no consequences.
Yeah.
Besides what? The man? Whatever man wanted to consequence me for?
Yeah, I don't like the sound of that.
I don't like that either.
No, I don't like the sound of that.
Because how can a man judge me fairly?
Christian, what do you think good's going to happen out of this?
What do I think good's going to... I do not know because I am not God. What I'm going to try to do is explain to every single person that every single person has just as much as right to be as happy as you are. And you have just as much right to try and make every single person as happy as you want to be.
And that's fun. And that's fun.
It's not even fun. It's just the right thing to do.
It's the right thing to do. And it's fun. And it's more fun than not doing it.
That's what you think. But you know in your heart it's the right thing to do.
I know in my heart it's the right thing to do.
Do you?
I do.
Okay. I'm not just...
For practical reasons as well as for any kind of sentimental reasons.
Sentimental.
Or religious reasons that you may come up with.
Sentimental, do you mean like you feel it?
In a way. Emotion? In a way, that's what I mean.
See, I believe emotions are different than... See, an emotion, like if you emotionally feel it's right, I think you can emotionally feel it's right.
And be wrong?
No.
And be right. Guaranteed.
Can I say that? Now, can I say any kind of absolutes as in you couldn't give me a reason to want to kill someone? No. I'm pretty sure you could probably give me a reason to want to kill someone.
I don't know. You seem like a pretty peaceful fellow. I don't know if I get that far.
If you were able to convince me that God didn't exist for some reason or whatever, would I want to kill someone? Or could you convince God doesn't exist and I just killed your wife or whatever?
Yeah, well,
what would I do?
I'm not sure of that. But the point is, there are definitely people out there who can be convinced, as we see.
But see, here's the thing, though. No matter.
Interests.
Okay, if killing is wrong, it doesn't matter the reason. I try and tell people this, but everyone tries to. A lot of people have argued with me.
Yeah.
They try and tell me. What if they raped your daughter?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, they raped your daughter. I'm very sorry about that. That was a wrong thing for him to do. And if he does not ignore the truth and does not ignore what he knows in his heart and soul to be wrong, he will understand what he did was wrong. Or he wouldn't have done it in the first place. And if he did do it, then he obviously knew. He obviously knows that what he did was wrong.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, do I know what the reason he was he did it?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He was wrong. But can I judge him for a sin that he committed? Sin means things that he would know in his soul to be wrong.
Yeah. How can you condemn him for that? You're not in his soul.
Well, really, another reason why I can't condemn him for that is that there is no difference between one kind of sin and another kind of sin.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Really. It doesn't have to be, I can't call, it's not because, I can't say, like, if I never stole or something, I couldn't just say, hey, man, why are you stealing?
Yeah.
You know?
Holier than thou.
Because even if I hadn't stolen, bro, you know?
Yeah.
I still wouldn't do it because I feel it in my heart it to be wrong.
Do you see this as a political movement more, or is it more of an individual?
What do you mean political movement? Why would I want to make a politics?
I don't know.
I want to make a government. There's no reason to make
You don't want to interact with government at all?
Thank you so much.
We're being offered beautiful peanuts, and we have to decline because it would make too many crunchy noises into the microphone.
I love everyone.
I love you, too.
Don't you?
I love everyone.
Really? I mean, really. Don't you?
Yeah.
Feel it?
Yeah.
So why ignore it? I don't know. Is it because
but that's not a political. That's not a political thing at all, though, is it?
Why does that have to be political?
I don't know. I think as a news person, I'm always trying to figure out, you know, try to condense it into a political soundbite or something.
Right.
It's just my instinct, I guess.
I break things down and logically in whatever I feel am like right or wrong.
Yeah.
Dude, I really believe in right or wrong. You want to know why? I think it's because. Oh, never mind. Yeah, I was trying to finish a story, wasn't I?
Yeah, you were.
About the man I talked to. Okay, so I talked to the man. Okay, I said. Do you believe killing is wrong? He said, no. I mean, do you believe killing is right? Yes, I do feel that killing is wrong, okay? And then I said, then I covered the one side now. Do you think there's a good reason to kill someone? Okay? He says, yeah, there is. There is a good reason. There's a reason that makes it so you can't tell me there's that's right or wrong. No, I can't tell you it's right or wrong anyway. You should be able to figure that out yourself.
Yeah.
I shouldn't be able to tell you anything because I'm not you. But... If everyone works like me and feel differently around like I anyway, so he says that, right? He starts going off and now he doesn't think it totally could be wrong. He's doubting. Doubting is just the same as lying, because 99.9% of the truth is still a lie. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it has to be 100% truth. Okay. So anyway, so after I said this, I hadn't realized that there was this girl sitting behind us, just watching me the whole entire time. This little girl. She's like 7 years old. I could probably find her for you. Her mom works in the kitchen, I think. And she's sitting there just bug-eyed looking at me, kind of sad. She's kind of sad. And I looked over there, and I was really trying not to cry because I knew what she was going to say. I asked her, do you think killing is right? She says, no. And I asked her, how about for any reason at all? Can you think of any reason at all why killing is okay, would be okay? No. Even a kid knows the killing is wrong.
Simple enough. Thanks for stopping by Kabu today. You rock. That was fun.
God bless. God bless everyone, and I love you all.
Now you're talking. Now you're talking the truth. Getting a lot of cat calls on that. That's great. Oh, no. Keep my eye open for it. What's that? You going to come over and talk to us? Tell our listening audience what you think about my coat.
It's sick.
Sick? Wait a minute. I'm over 50. I don't know what that means. I'm almost 50. I don't know what that means. What does that mean, sick?
Cool.
Yeah, that's what I like. I like
that's
the sound of that. Only about, I would say, 17% of the population like this coat. And when the people who like it, they really like it. Prefontaine is in the booth. Oh, I think I'm going to go to some music for a bit. I'm tired. I'm going to get some coffee or something. That was awesome. Thanks so much for saying that. This is Joe Meyer. We're broadcasting live on the KBOO stream. Live from Freedom Rectangle, and Main Street runs right through it. And there's a giant elk, which usually young people climb on weekends. Signing off for now. Here's something that's in the queue.
I've been trying to make some. I've been back and forth, but we're down here now. Oh, there's a man with a guitar. I'm gonna fade this music down, I suppose. Going on. What's your name, sir?
Mitch.
Mitch here is he's on the guitar.
This should be a march song, something we could all get behind. One of you gentlemen want to come up with the words, you get perfect thing.
All right.
Oh.
That was written here in Portland.
Thanks,
for the
Mitch,
good people of Portland.
Mitch is saying that was written right here in Portland.
Yes, by someone with a medical marijuana card.
By someone with an actual medical marijuana card.
He really should be in prison instead of playing guitar and trying to express himself.
You play something else for us, Mitch?
Yeah, this is just stuff I come up with down here while at the Occupy Portland. I run into some really nice, talented people that they bring a guitar to pass the time when it starts raining. You got to get out of the rain showers. And we've really come up with a couple of nice pieces. And once we collaborate, I'm sure we'll come up with something really good. What we'd really like is a nice voice, someone with a Portland persona to come in and nail it, okay? Get the message across with no ifs, ands, or buts one time.
You're looking for some lyricists, something like that, you're saying?
Looking for someone with talent.
Yeah.
That has a statement, that that ain't going to say it just to you or I, but to everyone.
Yeah. A Bob Dylan voice of this generation.
This is the generation. This is the only time that we have. We don't have any other time.
Yeah.
If we could get a rallying call to something as basic as so if you're out marching, got no hope, damn near out of rope. And I guess until they bring back hemp, we're going to have to do with Chinese rope. Okay, we can't even hang people with good old Kentucky hemp anymore. We have to import our rope. It's just not fair. You know, I think even our prisoners' mattresses in lockup are made in China or Guatemala. Nothing's made in America anymore except militarism. Death and poverty, unemployment. These are coming to neighborhoods near everyone. It's already come to Portland in a big way. Portland is making a splash on the scene. We've got great people, got great music. Got great representatives. K-Boo is doing a great job down here, getting the only flavor. Everyone else is imports, and they're not welcome, as far as I know, media-wise. We do have our taste. We're not cheap, but we can be had. I think I heard that somewhere. Matter of fact, I'm still saving up to be white trash. And anyone wants to buy any of my music, well, it has to be on sale. It ain't. Welcome to come over and jam and collaborate. We can also talk democracy, ideas. And if you just want to burn one, we'll have to find a place you can burn them, because it's my understanding you can't medicate here.
One second.
Go a little peaceful here.
Everyone else too.
We love you, man.
like that, Joe.
I like that.
This place?
Yeah.
Are you experiencing democracy? Are you feeling it? Can you feel the energy that's down here?
I feel a lot of good things. I like their decision-making process. I like their emphasis on education. I like their emphasis on one-to-one interactions, one-to-one learning. There's a lot of things I like about it. I like meeting people like you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I like meeting all people.
Yeah.
I love experiencing the human kind, okay? We're so separated in everything that we do. Either you're a professional this, you're a professional that. You worship this, you demonize that. I mean, we all forget that we come from the earth. And that no matter what your position in life, you're not going to go live anywhere else except here on earth. I was very fortunate, and my younger brother, he got killed in an accident. But he was the first green burial allowed in the United States.
Is that right?
That's right.
What year was that then?
This was 2005.
Okay.
The first since the Civil War.
Okay.
And the very first to be green burial in California.
What does that look like then?
What does it look like? A thing of beauty.
Okay.
I tell you, I never expected anything like it, to where people, friends of all over, you never know who your friends are till you're no longer here. But it's a beautiful thing. These green burials, they allow no man-made materials to go in with you.
Hmm.
So you're not embalmed. You're not in a store-bought casket. His friends pitched together, built him a nice pine box, put nice rope handles on it, wrapped him in a beautiful linen, put him on ice. And then those with talent did some of the most beautiful artwork you ever seen on his casket.
Yeah.
And expressed their love for him on the casket.
Wow.
That's a beautiful thing. And that's a green burial.
It's not store-bought.
Not store-bought. It's not going to go into the earth. Someone's going to dig it up and sell the handles in 20 years for the lead weight or whatever.
Yeah. I read a lot of places that we've lost touch with death in our society somehow. Death used to be much more common. I wonder how that affects us as a people.
Well, too many people fear death.
Fear death because it's unknown, I guess, or less known than it was.
Well, how many books have you ever looked at to where you're afraid to open the next page and read about it? And life is just the greatest gift you can ever imagine. So you got to expect, how do you top off such a great gift with a greater gift, the one that you're afraid to open? Okay? So death is just the next phase of life. Nothing to be afraid of. We need to worry about living here now in better conditions than we are.
You want fear?
Not fear.
Yeah.
Not fear at all.
Yeah.
We should be dignified, educated, and loving our children, educating them, trying to get better for all around us, not just for ourselves. As you can tell, I could go sell any one of these songs for $5-10 gazillion dollars, but I don't do that. I choose to let my piss do the talking.
Okay. Yeah.
So, as you can see, that $1 million, I'm working on my second million right now.
Yeah.
First one never come along. So.
First one's the hardest.
It must be. Very elusive. But I would like a job. I've been applying every place in town for a long time. And I'm qualified. I'm almost smart enough to call myself a dumbass. To know that I can learn more every day. But my piss will never pass muster. Never.
Yeah. What about Social Security? You got that rolling in any case or unemployment?
No, sir. No, sir. I have a wife who has been on her job for 30 plus years, and they don't drug test.
Okay.
And she's in the education field. But in mine, the construction, like I said, I was a member of the bricklayers here in town for a lot of years. They don't stand by you. They want your union dues. They want you see union reps out here telling these young people, boy, we could sure use healthy young plumbers. We could use healthy young carpenters. We could use healthy this, that, and the other. Well, healthy as long as you don't have to pee, okay? You're only as good as your urine, okay? You're not as good as your education, as good as your experience with different tools, or your ability to deal with people in situations. It all depends on your urine.
You think the union let you down in that regard?
Oh, I got blackballed by the bricklayers. You bet.
Yeah.
They let me down hard. And I don't mind telling you, I could name names. But the thing is the ones that let you down, they just like in politics, they get elevated, you get terminated.
Yeah.
Okay?
What's the hope for American unions?
To get union members and to get past this demonization of hemp as a sustainable commodity and manufacturing here in our country. Let's put people to work with real wages, real sustainability, and stop the lie that they'll never amount to anything if they can't piss clean.
Yeah. You gonna play us another song, Mitch? Well, Mitch, thanks for stopping by today. Anything you want to, anything, last words you got for people out here today or for anything else?
Yeah, don't hold it against anyone their urine. Open up jobs, open up the hemp, get the heads out of the butts of these politicians and these big corporate banksters who are making tons and tons and tons of money, and let my people go.
Thanks for stopping by, Mitch. Thanks for the music.
Thank you, Joe. Thanks for giving me a voice.
Yeah. Another guest, William, is joining us right here in downtown Portland, where we're streaming live from Freedom Rectangle. Main Street runs through it, and you can prove the Pythagorean theorem if you only arrange these tents a little bit differently. William, can you say what you're doing down here?
Hi, Joe. Thanks for inviting me to be here. I am presenting a series of workshops that are in
a little more into the mic, I guess. Or can you bend it over?
Does that work better? Does that work better right there?
That's good.
Check.
So you're organizing workshops down here in Occupy Portland.
I'm presenting a series of three workshops that are entitled Reality-Based Economics for Reality-Based Human Beings.
I have not heard about Reality-Based Economics.
It is work that I've been doing for... I started about 30 years ago.
So you're an economist then? Or
Not by training.
Okay.
I worked briefly with Buckminster Fuller, man that invented geodesic domes. That's what he's most known for. But what he did is he looked at the world as a single system, humanity as a single family. He said, he questioned, he had some questions. What information do we need? What tools do we need? What strategies do we need if we want 100% of humanity to be successful?
Successful, and then what's a measure of that, would you say?
Well, certainly, I think the first measure would be everyone having food.
Simple enough.
That's one of the things that he worked on. I don't know exactly when. I think maybe somewhere around the 50s or the 60s. He did an analysis, and lots of other people have done it. The United Nations and larger organizations have looked at how many people do we have on the planet and how much food do we produce. Every study I'm aware of that has done that has said, we do produce enough food. So, for example, in 1980, the population was either 4 or 4.5 billion people. We have enough food for everyone on the planet.
And that's theoretically we have enough food? We could grow enough, or we actually
we do grow enough. We do it. It's not we can, we do.
And it's wasted. The excess is wasted somehow, or what do you?
Yeah,
it's,
or
not,
just,
it's a problem of distribution.
It's a problem of distribution. And at that time, about 40 million of our brothers and sisters starved to death every year. Now, in year 2010, 2011, we are still producing enough food, and we have a population of 6.5 and now approaching 7 billion people. So it has always been, at least for the past 50, 60 years that we've done these studies or that I'm aware of, we produce enough food to feed every human being on the planet. This year, we're down from about 40 million people starving to death, we're down to about 20 million. So we're definitely making progress. However, the fact still remains we produce enough food for every human on the planet.
So what's gotten better? How do we bring those numbers down of starvation?
How do we, or how did we?
How have we, since it seems like there has been improvement?
You know, I actually don't know.
Okay.
That isn't the focus of what I do. Okay. I look at, in the same way Buckminster Fuller did, I look at the world as a single system. And the area that I have specialized in is looking at economics and finance. For the most part, we the people, politicians, economists, as I listen to us, we use the words economics and finance interchangeably. I heard President Obama a couple of months ago. He used those two words in the same sentence, meaning the same thing.
I didn't really notice that. It's something to look out for, though.
Truly. Okay. Listen to how we use those two words. When we go to the definition or go to the dictionary, and the dictionary I looked up, and now here's the thing. There are a number of definitions for those words. So there's not an absolute definition. However, when I went to the dictionary once and looked up the word economics, it talked about number one, it's a social science that studies the, I forget, there's intervening words.
Manufacturing and distribution of goods or something.
Well, you're getting to it.
Okay.
The key words that screamed off the page at me were production, distribution, and use of goods and services.
That's good, yeah.
And I noticed that it didn't say anything about money. So it was a lightning bolt moment for me when I read that. I said, production, distribution, use of goods and services. No mention of money. So I realized that, so we can look at production, distribution, and use of goods and services completely independent of money. Okay, let's do that.
Well, we knew about the barter system for a while, I guess, but that wasn't normally classified as economics or...
Well, I address the issue of barter, and when I do address it, as I learned from Buckminster Fuller, I try to go to the basics, to the bottom. I look at definitions of things.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at finance, and because there are proposals out there to look at barter, we should go back to a barter system. But when we look at the principles of finance and the principles, the underlying principles, why do we have a barter system? Why do we have a financial system? It turns out that the principles are the same, whether it's a barter system or it's a financial system. So if I can backtrack just for a second, we've got a definition of economics. It's production, distribution, use of goods and services. Well, then what is money and what is finance? Money is a management tool. It's a tool that we have used to determine who gets access to goods and services and how much access they get. Finance is a management system. So we've got economics, which is production, distribution, use of goods and services. That is all fact-based. We've got the system that manages a fact-based economy that is based on everything except the facts. That's why when the University of Michigan measures consumer confidence, the Fed, the U.S. government, the international banks and businesses, they partially base their financial policy, they call it economic policy, but they partially base their financial policy based on consumer confidence.
Mm.
Well, when anybody that engages in the production, distribution, and use of goods and services, like Ford Motor Company, for example, when they design an automobile and they need a particular grade of steel for the crankshaft, they don't have a supplier that comes to them that says, I have confidence that my formula for crankshafts is what you need. Ford Motor says, I want you to prove it to me.
Sure,
you have to give me the facts of that material that you're proposing I use for a crankshaft. So you have to have repeatable and predictable facts before Ford Motor Company will...
Sure, the science-based approach,
they're
really.
Science-based. And again, if you start listening, you know, to the quote-unquote economic news, it's really almost exclusively financial news. It's all about confidence, consumer confidence.
Right.
It's whether investors are, enthusiastic about the current news or they're pessimistic. It's about control. It's about speculation, manipulation. So we've got a fact-based economy being managed through money and finance with everything except the facts. And the negative consequences are pretty obvious to everyone.
Right. This is Joe. We're streaming live on KBOO from Freedom Rectangle, and Main Street runs right through it. I'm talking to William. We're talking about reality-based economics and really separating the idea of finance from economics. They're really saying economics is two things. It's the real goods, the use and production of them, and then the management tool, which we're calling money or finance.
Well, yeah, yes. So I make the distinction between economics and the management system for economics, which is called money and
finance. So where does the stock market fit in, for example?
Well, the stock market is totally a function of having a management system, a money-based management system. You alluded for a second, I'm trying to think what you said. Oh, you mentioned barter. And what I said was that barter and money, or mediums of exchange, really that's the generic term for it. So barter and mediums of exchange are based on a principle, a common principle. Here's the principle. It is what I can control, I'm going to withhold from you unless you give me something that I value equally to what I'm controlling. And today, really, I want you to give me something that I value more because I want to make a profit.
I can control what I can withhold from you.
Well,
is that what you said?
The fundamental principle is what I can control. So anything I can control.
Yes.
So we now are in a position we have corporations that control. They control genes, you know, they control plants and animals.
So it's natural, it's human nature, it's a fundamental principle of this theory that if a human can possess something, he will withhold it? Is that
Well, that's what
is?
We do.
That's what we do, that's
and
what,
that
you observe
is the
that.
Fun to, and, well, you observe it, you know.
Okay.
Anybody, take a look.
That's a tendency to greed, basically. Tendency
well,
for greed.
Well, it is greed, yes.
Okay.
So the fundamental principle of, so anybody that engages in barter, anybody that engages in a medium of exchange, that is the principle that underlies that behavior. What I can control, I'm going to withhold from you.
Universal human principle.
Well, I would not say that it's a universal human principle because there's another principle that economics actually is based on. So again, if we get back to the definition of economics, it is the production, distribution, and use of goods and services. That's the most useful definition, and that's the one that I use in the work that I do. If we stand back for a moment and look at the universe, let's just consider the universe without human beings for a moment, just for the sake of observation. The universe produces stuff, the universe distributes stuff, and the universe uses stuff. That's what's happening.
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by universe uses something. It's inanimate, presumably, but what do you mean by...
Well, for example, plants on the Earth use solar energy, and they turn that into leaves, and then some plants turn it into raspberries and blueberries and apples and oranges.
So there's use, but there's not really a goal or a direction or...
Well, not that we have... Well, we could debate that.
Okay.
There seems to be a direction towards life. You know, we're here kind of... There's lots of life going on.
There's lots of life going on.
Plants and animal life. There's human life. So it seems to me that there is a direction, you know, to the economy. It's towards life. But again, if we stand back for a second, the universe produces stuff, the universe distributes stuff, the universe uses stuff. That's actually what's happening. So what we have then is this gigantic economy that we have called the universe. So the economy equals the universe.
Sure.
Capital T-H-E, the economy, and equals the universe.
When you say the universe, do you mean the universe over all time or sort of a snapshot of what's happening now?
Yeah, all time. Yeah, that's...
And in that mythology, is there a big bang and then a big collapse, or is that relevant?
I don't think it's relevant.
Okay.
For the purpose of this, it's not relevant.
Okay.
So, again, we've gotten then back to definitions, okay? So we've defined economics as production, distribution, use of goods and services, and we've observed that that's a definition of the universe. Production, distribution,
or the universe does those three things.
Or it does those three things.
We can assign that to the universe.
Okay. And then we've said, okay, what is the fundamental principle of barter and finance? And it is withholding from. What I can control, I'm going to withhold from. Really, withholding from is the issue. Okay, let's switch back to the universe for a second, the economy. What is the fundamental principle of the economy, of the universe?
Conservation of energy?
Well, the fundamental principle relative to what we're talking about, production, distribution, and use of goods and services, the fundamental principle is sharing with freely.
So well, now that when you say sharing with freely, that seems like you're implying a will somewhere. We talked about that a little bit about whether a plant is growing. Is there a direction? Is there a cause, or is there a goal? And when you say sharing intent, what has intent, I guess? What is intent to share?
Well, here's how I use it. And by the way, I appreciate what you're saying and the direction you're going
in. I'm a scientist by training. I have to warn you.
Fantastic. I love it.
Okay.
A genuine economist.
No, a scientist.
See, No. Here's my kind of dream scenario. I want to give a talk to a group of scientists.
Okay.
And one of the things I'm going to propose to the group of scientists is will the real economists please stand up?
Yeah.
And well, it is my desire that every single scientist in the room stands up. Because the folks that we call economists are really financialists. They have almost no experience in the production, distribution, and use of goods and services. Scientists and engineers have great experience, and they're all fact-based.
Fact-based or somehow physically based, materialist-based. Is that what you mean? Are you
based
dividing
on
them?
Facts, because when... What
observable
kind of
facts, presumably, then. Or color
repeatable
your... okay.
and predictable.
Right.
So what kind of scientist are you?
Physicist.
I know very little about physics, so being a physicist, you can appreciate that when... well, again, Ford Motor Company wants to, get a crankshaft, they want proof of the properties of the material that's being proposed for the crankshaft.
Sure.
They don't want something that somebody has confidence in.
Right.
So they're not polling the supplier's confidence in his materials. They want proof of it. So science and economics is all based on facts that are repeatable and predictable. Economics is based on everything except the fact. It's based on things like confidence, speculation, control, manipulation.
Is the token of money necessary to make that leap? If you only had barter, would that still happen?
Would what still happen?
Well, the abstraction.
Well, can we... Okay, so let's get back for a second, okay? So we've talked about fundamental principles. Barter and mediums of exchange are based on the principle of withholding from. The universe is based on the principle of sharing with freely. There's an example that we can use. When human beings landed on the moon, there was no one that had their hand out that said, there's a landing fee, you're staying here for 2 weeks, rent, you're going to take materials back, you're going to scrape up some of the soil here, the dust, and you're going to take rocks and minerals, and you're taking them out of here. You got to pay for that stuff. The universe is a completely sharing with freely system.
Anyone can go anywhere.
Yeah. The universe has never charged human beings anything, and we have the entirety of the universe available to us free of charge. It's only when we came into the picture and said, I can control this and you can't have it, and then we institutionalize that. So money and finance are based on that fundamental principle, and the universe is based on a completely different principle. So I am in favor of anything we can do to get more equitable access to goods and services to all 6.5 billion of our brothers and sisters. So reforming the financial system, if it accomplishes that, I'm in favor of it. I am also saying that it can't work long term. See, in the 1930s, in the Great Depression, we reformed the financial system. And there was, in fact, more equitable distribution of goods and services. Well, interestingly enough, about 30 years ago, around the 1980s, we started to dismantle those reforms that were instituted in the 1930s.
You mean controls,
yeah,
oversight,
banking controls,
regulation,
and the New Deal and so on. Yeah, those, the Glass-Steagall Act, that stuff got set aside.
Right.
And so now we're back into a situation similar to the 1930s. In fact, in many ways, it's worse than what we had in the 1930s. So it doesn't matter how much we reform a faulty system, it's ultimately going to fail. Now, there's...
What's fundamentally wrong about it?
Because it's based on the principle of withholding from, and it's trying to manage a completely sharing with freely economy, a universe that we exist in. We're trying to manage a free universe with a withholding from system.
Sure. So our substrate is naturally sharing, and we're trying to come along and impose this artificial withholding from system.
Yep.
Where do you think that came from? Have you studied human evolution or the psychology of early man in any ways? I'm always fascinated by that subject. And where did that come from? Because presumably when we were animals, if you believe that, and most people do, we were natural.
Yeah. I actually have some working hypotheses of where that came from, or kind of directions that I think it came from. However, for the purposes of my work, it's not really necessary, because the system that we have developed called money and finance or barter, we don't have to have. We can now design and implement a system that is based on sharing with freely. Some people say, well, greed is inherent in human nature. And maybe it is. But that doesn't mean we have to have an economic management system that is based on greed. And the model that I use, that to me makes sense. When this country was founded, and certainly up until the Civil War, slavery was institutional. It was part of the institution, the laws, and so on, at least in the South of this country. And what happened in the Civil War is we deinstitutionalized slavery. We stopped slavery as an institution, as a way that we, the people of the country, did business. I am clear that today, if any country tried to institutionalize slavery, it wouldn't be allowed. We, the people of the planet, the international community, the United Nations, would flat out not allow institutionalized slavery. Now, did we end slavery? No way. We've got slavery everywhere on the planet. We've got slavery in Portland. Sex slaves, children. There's just a report that three or four developmentally disabled people were held in slavery. So we didn't end slavery. We did end the institution of slavery and the practice of it. We dramatically reduced the practice of slavery. So I'm not claiming, at least in this work about economics, that we can end greed. I am claiming that we can end institutionalized greed. We can design an economic management system that is based on the principle of the universe, which is sharing with freely. Within that, will people still be greedy? Certainly possible. But we don't have to have institutionalized greed, which is what we have now.
What does it look like taking money, taking finance out of economics then? What's it look like practically? What do I do when I go to work? What do I do when I want some groceries?
Well, there are four ingredients to economics. There's actually five ingredients. The first is energy. The second is materials. The third is process time. The fourth is human labor. And the fifth is human know-how. So we, and you as a physicist.
That's way too many for a physicist, by the way.
So when we talk about human know-how, we can't, for example, plan on going to San Francisco by using teleportation. You as a physicist, the reports that I read is that we have, in fact, observed teleportation, you know, with atoms, but we have not yet been able to develop a technology to teleport human beings to San Francisco. So we always start from our current level of know-how, which is we can get there with bicycles and automobiles and airplanes and trains and so on. So of the five ingredients of economics, our know-how is where we start from. So that leaves four things. There's energy, materials, process time, and human labor. Because we now have two tools, computers, where we can gather and manage and process vast amounts of data and do it almost instantaneously. The second tool is communication technology. We have now a world around communication system where we can communicate data almost everywhere on the planet. Those were the last two tools that were necessary in order to change over from a regionally based money system, money that manages economics. We can now change over to a world around economic management system that measures energy, materials, process time, and human labor.
So the true cost of goods.
Absolutely.
Are we talking about
right
Marx
now,
all of a sudden?
Well, certainly Marx had something to contribute in that. See, every theory has something to contribute. The problem is that when we look at it through the lens called withholding from, the distortions are gross.
But the lens is the only thing we've ever known somehow.
Well, I don't think so.
Okay.
So when we are in a loving relationship, so whether it's so with my wife Wendy or with my brothers
or when you're first born,
or with my parents or when I'm first born, we do things we share with freely.
Yeah. That's why
we don't charge. See, when I make dinner for Wendy, I don't write her a bill and say, "There you go, sweetie, pay up."
And she doesn't leave a tip.
Well, she frequently does. Okay. Not money, but, you know, nice. She shares freely with me, too. I share freely with her, and she shares freely with me.
I think that's why I enjoy hanging out with kids so much, because they haven't forgotten that or something.
Well, exactly. See, and actually, there's recent research and books being written, and Lynn McTaggart, the name comes to mind, where she wrote a book recently that really, she points out that really the desire to share with freely is really far more prevalent, and that's really fundamental to us as human beings. The greed thing that we have practiced and that we have institutionalized is not our fundamental drive. So there's beginning to be lots of evidence, and lots of folks are talking about.
And what
that
kind
really
of, is she a researcher or journalist?
I don't know enough about the work because I didn't read it in detail. I just know that.
Sure.
God, I can't remember the title.
Yeah,
of
it's
the
one
book,
of the.
But I think it's Lynn McTaggart. I think
it's not Sex at Dawn. I guess.
Say again?
Sex at Dawn. Have
Sex
you read
at Dawn. No, I haven't.
That was very good. No. Their main claim was that ever since agriculture, humanity has not really recovered. Because that's when possession started. And possessiveness. That's when sharing stopped.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Again, where it started and so on, you know, is
well, just
it's not
premise.
Something that I directly deal with.
Yeah, not really saying a geographic place where greed started, but the idea that agriculture was part of that process. And I think I can at least imagine that before agriculture, you know, what did you own? What could you even hoard? It was all about the community, and almost an individual didn't have wealth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was called Sex at Dawn because they talked about sharing in other regards.
Okay.
It wasn't really the highlight of the book, but it was, it made the title sexy.
Yeah.
And it was
yeah.
a great book, so I would recommend it. Cool. If you're curious about the evolution of those kind of ideas, or, you know, I don't know why I am. Maybe as a scientist, you know, what's the origin of greed? You know, where can I pinpoint that sucker?
Right, yeah.
But you're saying it exists, and here we are.
Yeah,
what can we
I
do with it?
Yeah, I acknowledge that it exists, and I point out that our systems are based on that, that so we have
right.
institutionalized greed,
right.
and we can now deinstitutionalize greed. We can institutionalize love. We can institutionalize sharing with freely.
I like the sound of that, but what's how is greed institutionalized? Is it just a question of being rewarded for
patents,
it? Or?
For example,
patents
are a great example of how... If I invent something, I can patent it, and what that does is that restricts, it controls the benefits of that product or that process for me for a period of time before you can have any of the benefits from it. So that's an example of institutionalizing it. There's...
Well, okay, just to be the devil's advocate, in the sharing model, people say, oh, you'll never get these new fantastic medicines because we need financial incentives in order to invent
that's,
things.
That's, you know, that... I fully acknowledge that money is a motivator, and it's a very powerful one. And I am motivated by money. However, what I like to point out is that when human beings developed language, when human beings learned how to use fire for heat and to cook food, when human beings learned how to use a wheel or a lever or how to... use a hollowed out log to get across bodies of water, all of those things and lots of other developments, discoveries, were made and shared long before the invention of money. So while we do in fact use money and money is a great motivator, it is by far not the only motivator. And because we've institutionalized it, it is definitely predominant. We have conditioned ourselves to be motivated by money.
Right. You mentioned
we can demotivate ourselves
yeah.
to be conditioned
you
by money.
You mentioned that you yourself were motivated by money. I guess most children aren't, so that's part of our conditioning in a way. Or where does that desire for money come from? That's just something we learn as well, based on fear or lack of community or what? I mean, when you're just taking a path from the four-year-old who doesn't care about money.
Yeah, I, personally, again, we're getting into my personal spiritual kind of orientation. You know, I think that's one of the things that that was one of the things that we chose to engage in as humans, and. I think it's one of the things, greed, is something that we chose to engage in and that we can choose to not engage in.
So what does the economy look like again now without really what people call the lubricant, the cash, the cashola?
Well, for me, my work and for the workshops that I'm doing, what I say is that... that we're living in the golden age of productivity. And you as a scientist can appreciate this, if you look at life right around the year 1900, approximately, so not exactly, the richest, most powerful people on the planet, kings, queens, heads of international businesses, heads of central banks and so on, not one of those people had electricity, radios, telephones, moving pictures, televisions, automobiles, airplanes, the internet, computers, nanotechnology, biotechnology, genetic technology, robotic technology. No one had been to the moon and back. Nobody living in space full time.
So compared to them, we're living like kings in a way. You know,
we are living at a level above what the kings did only 111 years ago.
Wow.
Now, not only that, in the year 1900, we had not invented mass production. So we have gone from no human being having access to those things in 1900 to in the year 2011, almost all human beings on the planet have access to those goods and services. That is a stunning accomplishment. If you look at the arc of human history, some people say we've been here 3,000 years. Some people say we've been here 100,000 or a million. Doesn't matter. Use the low figure, 3,000. 111 compared to 3,000. What is that? three-tenths of a percent, I don't know, it's some infinitesimal amount of the total time human beings have been here. So the leap in productivity in the last 111 years is stunning.
Stunning.
So, and we don't know that. We keep looking at that stunning, productive economy that we are in the midst of, and we don't see it. We still are having problems getting goods and services to people.
Right.
So my purpose in the workshop is to inspire us, number one, and secondly, to empower us to create a new economic management system for humanity and get rid of money and finance.
What's that management system look like then? I mean, are there still grocery stores? Are there still jobs to go to?
Yeah, see, it's only the management system. See, it's only the management system that needs to change. If we determine that we need grocery stores, then we should do that.
And we still have cash?
No, we don't need cash. Why need cash? If we can have direct access to goods and services, we don't need cash. See, we could title this, instead of titling it reality-based economics, one of the titles I considered of about 100 titles that are perfectly appropriate, one of them is direct access economics or direct economics. We can deal directly with the things, with goods and services, without going through the medium of exchange, any medium of exchange.
And with such a system, how would transport costs be paid, for example? I mean, sometimes there's a middleman, and it seems like it's convenient to have cash to give the guy a quarter out of every dollar or something.
Well, again, we exist in a sharing with freely universe, sharing with freely economy. When transport is available, it should be freely available.
I see.
See, I cannot stress highly enough that we are conditioned to look at things in a particular way. What my work is about examining right from the fundamentals, from the definitions of words, and taking a look at the two things independently so that we can start to decondition ourselves. I'm going to give an example of how we are conditioned. We have the idea of credit and debt. We're all familiar with the idea of credit and debt and kind of how that works. This is the idea that this is the idea behind credit and debt. I can have a product or a service today and pay for it later. So for example, I can get a car today and I can pay for it over 3 or 5 years. I can get a house.
Your handshake is good here. Your handshake is good here. Your credit's good here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I have to pay for it.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's take a look and see if that idea that I can have a product or service today and pay for it later, let's see if that's a valid idea in the universe. Okay, so we're going to use the universe as a test case.
Okay.
See if that's a valid idea. If it was a valid idea, and I'm a farmer, I could go to my field in the springtime. I'm a corn farmer. And my yield, my harvest, is usually 10,000 bushels of corn.
Mm.
That's my average harvest. So, springtime, I go out to my field. I say, universe, I have not had a vacation in 10 years. I need a vacation. My daughter's getting married this year, and Wendy and I would like to plan a wedding for her. My brother is expecting a second child. He needs to build a second bedroom. Would you be willing to give me my 10,000 bushels of corn now? And next year, I'll plant twice as many seeds to repay you.
Right.
Now, any farmer that did that needs a vacation.
Yeah.
He needs the kind of vacation that gets him back in touch with reality because he's lost touch with reality.
Yeah.
So it turns out that the universe is a prepay system.
Right.
The farmer has to plant the seeds. He has to give nutrition to the seeds. He has to water the seeds. He has to provide a certain temperature range. It has to be warm enough. It has to have sunlight. And it has to have process time.
Right.
It has to have time for that seed to grow into a corn stalk and for the corn to develop until they're ready.
It's a natural economy somehow. It's a natural economy.
Well, it's natural. It's the economics is all natural. Okay? Economics is all natural.
Well, it's more natural in this case in that you can't borrow on the future, I guess. That's the distinction we're making, right? You can't borrow.
Bear with me. Okay? So I kind of get what you're saying, and maybe your question will be answered in the process here. So it turns out that nature is a prepay system. The farmer had to do all that, and at the end of the process, he gets his harvest, his yield. But human beings, you know, say, oh, I can get the car today and pay for it later. However, in terms of the universe, let's examine the process of building an automobile. People had to go out and mine for ore, iron ore, for example, and that iron ore had to be smelted and refined to make cast iron or to make various grades of steel for the different components of the car, the fender and the crankshaft and the engine block. We had to get sand. It had to be gathered. It had to be melted, heated to a certain temperature, and then formed into glass for windows. Petroleum had to be drilled for, and it got refined into fuel for the car. It got made into plastics for the dashboard and whatever, door panels, etc. So in terms of the universe, when the car or any other product has been completed, it is fully bought and paid for because the universe is a prepaid system. But yet we have conditioned ourselves to think that of the idea of, oh, I can get the product or service today and pay for it later, that's just a normal thing. We don't even think that, oh, that can't be a valid idea. It's an invalid idea. The universe does not work that way. It is a prepay system. In the case of a house, the tree had to grow, it had to be cut down, it had to be milled, the lumber had to be milled into various sizes and shapes of lumber. The iron ore had to be...
So someone had to pay Mother Nature, and then someone else can borrow, I guess, to get some sort of possession on that, the car or the house.
Well, hang on. That is what we have done.
That's what we have done.
That is what we have done. We have superimposed that system of withholding from onto a sharing with freely system. So in the case of a house, again, everything had to be done beforehand. Before we had the house, it had to be assembled. All those parts had to be assembled. And then in terms of the universe, when the house is complete, it is fully bought and paid for. So human beings are, however, with a house, if I live in it, I typically get a mortgage and I pay for it for 30 years. When I move out and you move into it, we reset the clock and you pay for it for 30 years. So we are in the position, human beings are in the position. We have 1,000-year-old buildings on this planet, Europe and in the East, 1,000-year-old buildings that were fully bought and paid for 1,000 years ago that we are still paying for. That is how grossly distorted and how enslaved we are. And I use that term specifically. Credit and debt is a system to enslave human beings. Now, it is sanitized. It is moralized. I pay my just debts.
Yeah. I think you're right about that.
But there is no debt to be paid in terms of the universe because the universe is a prepay system.
Well, it's a tool that allows some percent of humans to enslave a larger set of humans.
Exactly. Now, here's the thing. When we are here and our movement is becoming known as the 99% movement, and in terms of control, the 1%, yes, there is 1% that has their hands on the levers of control. However, they're not the only ones. Because when we talk about control, I notice in my life, and I don't know anybody else that I've met that hasn't used money to control their spouse or their children or their parents or their employer. So we've all used the tool called money to control each other.
That's the society we live in.
Yes. Now, we've conditioned ourselves to do that. Again, we have the opportunity to stop doing that. So anything we can do to demonetize everything, share with freely, that's one of the things I work on myself. I try to demonetize my life. I try to give things away as much as I can.
Demonetizing is going even farther than barter system. You're giving freely.
Yes. What I'm proposing, and I'm certainly not the only one, but the opportunity that we have on this planet is to share with freely.
Right. You mentioned you worked with Buckminster Fuller. I wonder if you have anything to relate in that regard or how he influenced you or what you guys were working on.
Well, I worked with him on a series of events that he did called Integrity Day with Buckminster Fuller. And I specifically, his grandson, Jamie Snyder, started a foundation called the Friends of Buckminster Fuller Foundation. And the foundation actually produced the events where Bucky, that were titled Integrity Day with Buckminster Fuller, and he spoke a day-long event.
What do you think that meant, Integrity Day?
I think the way Bucky used the word integrity was wholeness, as in all of us on the planet as a system. Us in the way we relate to each other in a wholizing way, so that when we engage in actions that are based on love or based on sharing with freely, that is a wholizing experience. I feel relatedness to everybody when I share freely with you. That is not an experience I have when I'm out just making as much money as I can, and I don't care how and who. I don't care about anything other than making money. That is not a wholeizing, that's not a fulfilling experience. I haven't found it to be, and as I interact with people, and I've interacted with a fair number of people, you know, we tend to, you know, be more fulfilled when we share, when we love each other.
Yeah.
So he's, I think that's the way he used the word integrity.
Integrity. So on Integrity Days, would you talk about integrity in a certain area or production or more general? Or
that was in 1983-ish, okay. And I was actually the logistics manager at the Friends of Buckminster Fuller Foundation. So I wasn't actually a participant in the Integrity Day. So really, I'm not the best person to ask, you know, specifically what Bucky talked about.
Yeah, intriguing idea, and I like the title. I was just curious about what that meant, integrity, in what way, and so forth.
Yeah, I think he used it in the broadest.
It's an engineering kind of connotation in my mind. I'm not sure why.
Well, Bucky was an engineer, poet, philosopher, machinist, sailor, designer, inventor, author, mathematician. I will actually throw out a personal thing to
you. Thank
you. You deal in mathematics quite a bit, I guess. Have you ever heard of synergetics? So Bucky... This synergetics in math is the area of his work that I studied the least, I guess. And but the starting point that he relates to me was like really caught my attention. You asked me like how he influenced me, and this is it. He always went to like the bottom line, the starting point, as far as he could, the starting point of everything.
Where did greed originate?
Words. Exactly. Yeah. See. So this is the story that stuck with me. He said that he was a sailor, so he was familiar with sailing in the ocean and so on. He said, when I go down to the seashore and the waves come crashing in and there are millions and millions of bubbles here, I don't think that nature is carrying out the calculations for each one of those bubbles infinitely. Therefore, I don't think we have discovered nature's mathematical system. So pi is an irrational number, and then hence the surface of a sphere is irrational. There's no end to the calculation. You as a physicist and mathematician know more about this than I do, but pi is an irrational number, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
In the Bible, it was 3, which is just an integer. However, since then, we've refined it some.
Okay. So that was the thing that Bucky said. I don't think that nature is carrying out the calculations for every one of these bubbles infinitely.
In mathematics. Therefore, so what does he mean by that, do you think? In mathematics, nature is somehow not writing down a bunch of equations? Or I'm not sure
what
he meant.
Well, isn't nature's mathematics...
I hear that a lot, that that mathematics is the language of nature. I've heard people say that a lot.
Okay. Well, I think that's the isn't that your experience as a physicist?
Kind of, and I guess that comes from, you write down an equation that's true in one area of thinking, and then the math will lead you into another area which is physically true. And I think people used to be surprised by that. Like imaginary numbers is a good example. What an esoteric thing that is.
Okay.
It first came out because people like to try and solve cubic equations, and it's turned out if you used imaginary numbers, you were able to find real solutions. But then it became almost the language of quantum mechanics when that came along hundreds of years later.
Okay. Well,
but back to the bubbles at the beach.
Well, yes. Well, that story, that that we hadn't yet discovered nature's mathematical system or nature's coordinate system, and therefore he set off to discover nature's coordinate system.
I see.
And so he wrote two books on mathematics, Synergetics 1, Synergetics 2.
Is it a simplification of that? A sphere is a mathematical object, and yet a geodesic is more of a natural object? Or is that nature's math when he made those buckyballs?
Buckyballs, the story behind that, as I understand it, is Bucky predicted that there would be a form of carbon with that molecular structure.
60 carbon atoms.
And when that form of carbon with that molecular structure was discovered, it was named after him, Buckminster Fullerene, or Buckyballs.
Because he designed these geodesic domes with very similar physical properties.
Well, I think it kind of came. I don't know what the specific train he invented geodesic domes first, and then I think based on his work in geodesics and structure and so on, he came to the conclusion that there must be a form of carbon with that molecular structure, and then it was discovered.
Amazing.
So, yeah, really. There's. Oh.
Hi, Christian. Yeah. Christian's coming back to say, "You want to listen in on the headphones? I don't have a mic for you." Yeah.
Cool. Well, let's
finish up here for a second. I think we're almost done here. I wanted to ask you though. Buckminster seemed to have an excellent life. Was he a utopianist? And are you a utopianist?
Boy, without getting into really what you mean by that word.
We don't have time for that.
I will say this. Bucky wrote a book entitled Utopia or Oblivion.
Okay. I think that's a good place to leave it. William, thanks for stopping by today and talking to KVU. It was
a
pleasure.
Thank you so much, Joe. I greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, same here. And can I say? Okay. I don't think it's on.
William wants to give a quick plug for a workshop he's doing. Go ahead, William.
Yeah, so we started by talking about the reason I'm here is I'm presenting a series of workshops entitled Reality-Based Economics. We just had the second one today. The third one will be this Saturday, October 27th, 1 o'clock. It'll be at Shrunk Plaza, which is right across from City Hall, adjacent to the Occupy Portland site.
In the bowl there?
In the bowl.
Nice.
Yep, in the amphitheater.
Wow.
Everyone is invited. Please come. Please participate.
Folks, if you haven't been down here, it's something to see. You almost feel like democracy is happening right before your eyes.
There you go.
And there's a lot of teaching, and William's got something going on. What was the time again on Saturday?
1 o'clock Saturday.
Shrunk Plaza, October right across 26. From City Hall, isn't it?
Yes, directly across.
And is this a series? Are people going to need to go to all of them to get the gist?
No, not at all. Not at all. It's the same presentation done three times.
So again, Saturday, October 22nd, 1 p.m., Shrunk Plaza.
And if you can't make it and you would like to be in touch with the work that I do, there's several different ways. My name is William Daniels. My phone number is 503-314-6902. My email is wdinpdx@yahoo.com. You can go to my blog, and the title of and my blog is billionsofbillionaires.org. billionsofbillionaires.org. I invite everyone to participate with me.
William, it's been a pleasure to meet you and talk to you today.
Thanks so much, Joe.
Have a good one.
You too.
Loving everyone.